I remember there had been set up two different trucks, and Kennedy didn't want to speak from the one that was where the mass had taken place. And
did the mass take place out in the park too?
Mm-hmm. The mass took place on a truck, we were on the truck up there. That's where the mass took place. And Caesar was sitting right up here. And Kennedy didn't want to go up on that one originally because of the crosses and things behind there. And the Virgin, he didn't want the pictures taken relating him to a Catholic ceremony. But it was so crowded, and as soon as he stood up, so many people crushed around him, why then he just thought it was impossible to get over to the other truck, which was about 30 feet away.
So he stayed there.
So he went up on that one. And the speech was, he had checked the speech out with Dolores before, just to see if there's anything wrong. I remember it was written in very big print and about 30, 40 words on a page. And plastic cover, and he flipped like a loose leaf notebook. And he started out with a lot of attempts to speak Spanish, and it was very funny. And that was the first relief for the whole afternoon. And everybody was kind of relieved, you know, that he wasn't going to be real serious. And a lot of applause and a lot of laughter. And he talked about he talked specifically about Caesar and the fast, but then he also talked about general legislation that was needed for farm workers and challenging the continued strike and that sort of thing. Well, after it was over, he had to go about 80 yards to the car, and he was going to go straight to the car and then to the airport and leave in his plane, private plane. And people gathered around him so in such a mass that he couldn't move. It was just, and so about eight people got around him holding arms, trying to hold people back a foot or so. And he said, no, don't do that. He says, just let them come. He says, just let the crowd move, and we'll all just move with the crowd. And so he kept inching ahead. And it took him about 25 minutes to go that 80 yards. And then I remember he got in the car, and I went around the other side. And I got in, and I remember having closed the door and he was inside, and I got in the car and I was all ready to start moving out through the crowd, and he wasn't in the car anymore. He got out and he was standing on top of the car yelling, Viva la Huelga, you know, Viva la Causa. And people were tearing at his shoes and his pants, you know, trying to reach him. Finally he got back in the car, and I can remember we started moving ahead very slowly, and he rolled down the window, and people would grab his arm, and they wouldn't let it go, you know, and the car was moving, and they'd pull his arm back like this. And people, some heavy lady stuck her head into the window on the driver's side and almost was across, you know, laying across me, across the car, trying to touch her and get his attention, and she was yelling, Bobby, you've got to run for president. You'll run for president, won't you? You're going to run. You've got to run. Oh, please. Almost crying, you know. And finally, somebody pulled her out of the car, and he said very quietly, he said, I think I've just made up my mind. I think I'm going to run. He says, I think I'm going to announce it inside this car.
Guy that you spotted, or somebody spotted out there in the crowd that you were suspicious
No, I don't remember that. That might have happened, but I didn't see.
Well, somebody died. I thought it was you. I heard the story the same time, about the same time that you, I heard this from you. I didn't hear about the lady, but
yeah.
I heard it. Don't mean anything. But that, it seemed to me that this fellow, somebody spotted him, and maybe it was Marshall. And he told Bobby about him that, you know, that guy looks kind of suspicious. We don't know who he is. Or maybe it was Dolores. And so either Marshall Dolores then went over to, you know, find out who he was. And Bobby knew that that guy, you know, wasn't known if they were suspicious of him. And so you thought, well, he'll be a little worried about this. Or somebody said he did look a little bit worried. But then the next thing was he was up on top of the car forgetting all about it.
That was somebody else that was trying to keep him in the car. But that was about the end of it. Then we left, got on the plane. Now Caesar came in and the doctor brought him in through the crowd. He didn't go through the procession and everything. And
before the mass?
Yeah.
Before the,
yeah. And one funny incident was I can't remember the name of the it was an NBC reporter, I think, or maybe CBS or NBC, and he told this story afterward. He said that when we scattered the bread out, you know, it was amazing to.
Oh, you didn't tell me about it.
Yeah, the actual mass when the priests, there were about six priests up on the, and ministers up on the platform for the mass, and they went down in the crowd. They started handing out the bread, and the crowd was so crushed, you know, up toward the truck that you couldn't hand it to them individually. So you give them a loaf, and you just see it. People would be holding a loaf of bread over their heads, and they take a piece off. They were so crushed together they couldn't hand it this way. And you see the loaf from up on the truck, and it would start out a full loaf, and it just finally diminish into the crowd. And you just see the bread disappear into the crowd. And Chris Hartmeyer took the first piece of bread, and he went down and he gave it to Caesar. And cameras all zoomed in on that. And then he gave some to Kennedy, and Kennedy ate a little bit, and Kennedy gave Caesar a piece of what he had been eating. And this cameraman told me that after it was over, and it passed to some other, I think we were singing or something, he went back to Kennedy and says, you know, you're not going to believe this. He says, and I've never asked anybody to do this before. And he says, but this is so fantastic. But you know, I missed that shot. Would you please feed Caesar another piece of bread?
Oh, no.
And that's one of the pictures that shows up a lot. It was in Life magazine.
Oh, Center that's the one.
He went back and had him do that picture again because it had happened, and he missed it. So.
I wanted to ask you also, you said that getting back here back to the planning of the trial,
mm-hmm.
you said that the beautiful job done in planning for the trial,
mm-hmm.
and but you didn't get into the planning.
Well, the main thing was that it was decided it had to be very disciplined. Otherwise, we'd get thrown out of court, and it would make a mockery of the court thing, and it couldn't look like a demonstration. It had to look like a very disciplined outrage that Caesar would be taken to court. Yeah, and so the main thing I remember was that they started. They must have met about. They told everybody to come about 2 hours before Caesar actually was to appear. So they had been there for a couple hours. But in the meantime, almost, Marshall had been very careful in placing monitors about every 10 feet. And the way people were lined up, they're about four deep, and then in front of them, about every 6 feet, was a monitor, an armband. And, it's really hard to describe the kind of discipline that was there, you know. And what they'd been told was to do whatever the monitor does. If the monitor starts singing, well, then everybody sings. If the monitors kneel, everybody kneels. So there were no orders given. But the monitors would kneel down, and everybody kneeled down. Yeah. They'd stand up, and everybody stand up, which was fantastic, you know.
And how did you get all those people there?
I think there were news spots, radio spots, and a leaflet was passed out. A lot of those people were from right around here. They didn't come from long distances for that. And it was DiGiorgio and the Shenley workers and members and the problem. It was, I remember a lot of black people there that day. Well, there was an awful lot of effort made to keep to get Caesar to stop the fast, and I remember that I made a mistake once that was almost disastrous, because we're trying to decide. I personally didn't want to pressure him, because I knew that nobody could pressure him to do anything, you know. But other people were pressuring him. So finally they pressured him to at least make a statement about what it would take for him to end the fast. Not when he would, but what it would take. And so they told, what he said in essence was that, well, as soon as I'm convinced that the union is truly committed to nonviolence, well, then I'm going to stop. So there was that night I made that statement that Caesar was.
We're out of the map.
Yeah, I think it was the same time Ruther was there, and so there was an extra large crowd. And I said, you know, Caesar has said that whenever he's convinced that you are completely committed to nonviolence, then he'll start coming off the fast. And it was translated in such a way as you could see it on people's faces. They were feeling tremendously guilty, as though they were making him fast. And they almost got hysterical, you know. Some people began yelling, and they'd say, well, I'm nonviolent, I'm committed right now. I know it, I'll never commit another violent act in my life, you know. Right, and the whole crowd started yelling, stop the fast, or, basta, and everybody was yelling. And people started drifting away from the group immediately to go to him. You know, they're going to go to the door, open his door, and say, and tell him, you know,
well,
stop right now.
That
was when Ruther was there. I remember Ruther was there, and he didn't come out for that because he was too weak, and it was windy or something, and there were too many to be inside. So, I didn't know what to do, because the people were almost hysterical about this. So I Manuel or somebody started another subject, and just went on to something very quickly. They came back, and it subsided, but just about blew it, because the people were so hysterical about his being so weak and everything that they wanted to go right in there and force food down.
What interventions and manipulations made? Dash, the primary benefit.
Oh, I remember that where you're telling.
tell me about the way they were sitting around the fire?
Yes.
Out there. And then before you, we talked about the past. And do you remember hearing anything that they were talking about while they were sitting around there?
Oh, yes. There was a lot of different conversations going on. You know, it was a lot of time, and he once had stayed around all night. Well, you know, they talked about a lot of subjects. They talked about a lot of subjects. Of, you know, it's just conversation sometimes. They talked about a lot of times about the future of our movement. What will it be in the future? Would it be successful? Is it? Nobody had a negative attitude towards being successful. So I'm trying to say, you know, just they were wondering. Someone would say, we'll probably never get to see the real thing completed, and others would say that it might be sooner than you think, and things of this sort. Also, they discussed Caesar quite a bit. They would be concerned of his health. That was, you know, more and more every day. They would bring that up. And some of them would suggest that he had been on the fast long enough that somebody should talk to him to cease the fast. And others, of course, you know, different opinions would say that you had to respect what he was doing, that he knew best, he was usually right, and he was a great leader, and that he was doing it for a good reason, that they were confident he was doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And this sort of things.
Well, you remember you telling me about the little old lady who went in to see him, and after he'd been on the fast for quite a while, and she cried.
Oh, yes, this happened. This happened quite often. This happened every day, really. I didn't see every time, but this happened quite often, because you could see the people when they were coming out, they were still wiping their tears.
Well, but you told me about this one particular lady.
Yes. I was there when she came in, and she just said she just wanted to see him, just see him, and she talked to him. She went in, and she immediately she seen him, and he was very weak by then. He was lying on a bed, and he opened his eyes, looked at her, and this elderly lady just broke out in tears, and telling him that God would keep him, that he was a great man, and that sometimes the sacrifice could go too far, that they were afraid for his health, but they the same thing, you know.
Yeah,
that,
but didn't she say, she gave me something in Spanish that sounded like she said that we don't deserve this, like that sacrifice or something like that?
Yes, that was brought up quite a few times. She said that...
How did she say it in Spanish? Something about the sacrifice.
Yeah. I forget how I said it, but anyway, she said that we had suffered, our people had suffered for a long time, and we'd always suffered. We were accustomed to suffering, and but the sacrifice he was making would top everything that anybody else had done for either as individual or as a group, that this was the ultimate sacrifice, going without eating just for
his
people.
Que no
merecemos, or we do not deserve what you're doing for us. Yes, no merecemos, Señor Chávez, lo que está haciendo por nosotros.
Yeah.
I was very, very, very humble person was speaking here. And she said that all of us put together didn't deserve what he was doing for us. That he was doing more than enough without going to the fast. That's what she was really trying to say. And this was quite a... This was... Yes. Even I seen, I happened to be there when grown men went in there and they broke into tears. They just started talking and they just couldn't continue. They would break in tears. And this was very, very common.